If you will all take one of these cards, we're going to pass around. I'll tell you what the card's for in just a minute. What the card is for is a question, and we would like for all of you to write down a question at the end of... We're going to talk to you for 30 minutes as a group. And at the end of our 30 minutes together, I'd like for you all to write down a question and turn it in to Deanie and I as we meet the guys and the gals separately for the next 30 or 40 minutes. And then after that session is over, we'll come back together. After we've done those two things, we'll come back together and answer your questions. Now, I want everyone to fill out a card. If you don't have any questions on this subject, then you're probably unusual. But anyway, even if you don't have any questions on the subject, we want you to write none and turn it in. Don't put your names on it, but we would like you to put whether you're a girl or a guy, because it makes a difference from the perspective that you may have asked the question. So if everyone will take a card and write down a question sometimes during the next 30 minutes or so, and when we meet together as a group, we'll take up the cards. We won't have any time to look at them ahead of time, but then we're going to try to impromptu.
I'll let you answer all of them.
Answer the questions for you. Let's just have a word of prayer and ask God to bless this time. Father, we just thank you for the beautiful, beautiful afternoon that you've given us here in Norman this afternoon. We just thank you that this group can travel a long distance to have this time to think about what your will for their life would be. We thank you for the beautiful weather that we can come together today on your beautiful day. And God, I would just ask that you'd give us peaceful hearts this afternoon. I would pray in this very important subject of relationships between male and female, the relationships, interpersonal relationships that all of us must have at this time in our life. I just pray that you'll give Deanie and I real wisdom as we seek to share from our own experience. God, that we might be honest and open, that we might answer the questions that these folks will have in this area, and that your word, the principles that you would want us to learn, we would learn during this time this afternoon. We just ask that you take over every word that we speak. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. This morning I'm supposed to, this afternoon I guess I'm supposed to introduce the thing. Deanie and I come to you this morning, believe it or not, she's my wife instead of my daughter, but we've been at this for a few years. Deanie and I were students here at the University of Oklahoma. We were active, I was active a little bit in the BSU before Max came in 1967, but we were married in December of 1966, completed our last three semesters of OU together as a couple. We've been married for 12 years this year. We have three children, ages 3, 7, and 8 and a half, believe it or not. And so she really is older than 22. But we're here today just to share what Christ has done in our life and some helpful principles we think that perhaps we can share with you of what he's done in our dating relationship. Deanie and I don't come to you as having all the answers today, but we do come to you saying that we've had a very, very happy marriage for the last 12 years. And we've seen a lot of folks get married that have gone down the other road, and we've seen a lot of folks get married that have successful Christian happy marriages. And we want to share with you some of the dating principles and your relationships with the opposite sex that would be important in your life so that 12 years from now you can look back and say, Ken or Deanie, I'm in a happy marriage and I couldn't be happier than where I am right now. Deanie?
You can tell I don't coach his remarks, that jazz about his daughter. What we're going to do is kind of go back and forth and chronologically give you our story of dating, how we met, and how it progressed to the point that we got married and have been dating ever since. And as we go along, we'll draw out of our own experiences some principles and ideas and just give them to you as we go along. And we're going to, when we split up in the next session, get very detailed and practical in what the Bible has to say about different things. But right now I'll say I am from the West Coast originally and moved to Oklahoma City when I was a sophomore in high school. And Kent and I met each other basically through sharing an English class together in school. We'd seen each other in various groups, but we actually got to know each other through classes in school and had our first dating experience together as sophomores in high school. And we did such exciting things as walk home from school together and play badminton in my backyard, and then he'd have to go home before dinner time, you know, before his mother would call. And that's about the age we were when we first started dating, and it was a fun, good time. We had, previous to this time, both become Christians at very early ages. We're both from Christian families, and he became saved when he was 9, and I did when I was closer to 6. So we had, previous to even sophomores in high school, we had thought about dating, We had decided a lot of things beforehand, before we ever started dating. And one of the things that we had both decided separately, before we ever knew each other, was that we would date only Christians. And 2 Corinthians 6:14 says not to be unequally yoked together. And we decided that was a principle just as applicable to dating as to any other relationship. The Bible gave no exceptions to it, and we had taken it at face value, and that was one of the things we decided beforehand. So with that idea in mind, we were both eligible to each other, being Christians. And I would say another principle that I would draw out of the fact of just this early dating that we had was that we met in school. And I think sometimes we tend to be very narrow in where we look for eligible dating partners. And the fact is there's Christians everywhere, not just in my church or in my youth group or in my BSU or wherever we are that we're in with a group of Christians. There's also Christians in every other context out there, at work, in classes, at school. And we actually, if we had been too limited in our scope, would never have found each other, because the only common context we had at that time was a class in school, and that's where we first met.
Never stood next to you this long with my mouth shut before. Anyway, I'm supposed to tell you about our first kiss now. And I know that you all are not interested about anything like that. You're a spiritual group, but I'll tell you about it anyway. But Deanie and I were sophomores. We were 16 years of age. We were about ready to go into our junior year of high school, right at the end of our sophomore year. One afternoon, after playing tennis together, badminton, or doing something together, we had dated just for a month or two, and it broke up at this time. But I'll tell you how it broke up. One afternoon, I'd been warned by my mother, who was a good friend of her parents. They had moved in from Colorado. They'd been with the organization The Navigators that you may have heard of, and she had very strict moral codes, and I'd been warned by my mother not even to try to hold hands with her or do anything like that. And so one afternoon, after I dated her for a month or two, she had a beautiful brown ribbon in her hair, and I leaned over and told her what a beautiful ribbon that was and how beautiful she was, and I leaned over and kissed her on the cheek, and wham, you know. And she said that she didn't want to have anything to do with a guy like this, and so she went away to Colorado, and I didn't see her again for a number of months, and we did not date again until 2 years later in our life. The thing that I wanted to emphasize here is that, you know, even in your date life as college students, which is a very normal time of your life, that God is very sovereign in this area of your life. Deanie, her father had a successful practice in California. Successful medical practice in California, went with the Navigators for a couple of years to be an assistant to the president of the Navigators, and then came to Oklahoma City to enter a residency with 4 kids in school, most of them teenagers, at around 40 years of age to enter a residency, and especially ear, nose, and throat. Now, I believe that one of the reasons that he came to Oklahoma City was so that I could meet Deanie, but I believe that God will be sovereign. You know, you may have to be patient and wait, but God will be sovereign in bringing the people to you, not only your marriage partner one of these days, but even the people that you date. And God can be sovereign even in your dating relationship. Deanie?
Fresh off living at Glen Eyrie, I really was pretty much of a Puritan, I called myself later, when I'd loosened up some. And by the time we started dating again when we were seniors, I thought he was slow because he wouldn't kiss me for a long, long time for some reason. But we did start dating again when we were seniors in high school. And again, we had a class together in school, and it had been the year and a half or so in between there, we really had not had much contact in any group together. So when we had this common class, we again were thrown together. And to show you how relatively normal, or very normal, our dating experiences were, I was not above or beyond or anything else scheming to get him. And I was going steady with a fellow at the time.
Your BSU may never be the same again after this talk this afternoon. Go ahead.
I was going steady with a fellow and had been for a year, and Kent knew it. So, of course, there was no eligibility there. So I, at the time that I broke up with Tom, I made sure that this girl sitting behind me in class, just about the time that Kent sat down right across from me, we were talking as he came in, and she had been coached beforehand to say, just barely loud enough for him to hear. See, we didn't want to be too obvious, but definitely loud enough for him to hear. You mean you broke up with Tom? And she did it just perfectly, though, and Kent did catch on, and pretty soon he started making his moves, and
Jeremiah
we started dating at that time.
Jeremiah 17:9, the heart is deceitful above all things. Go ahead.
But we started dating then, and didn't quit. We're still dating.
I'm supposed to talk right now about balanced activities and group. Deanie was active, and I was active in a Southern Baptist church, and she was active in a very strong independent Bible church at this time. Both of us were very active in our youth groups, and our dating life was not balanced. It was balanced towards Christian and non-Christian activities because we were very, very super active, maybe even overactive in our youth groups and in everything that had to do with Christian Bible studies and this type of a thing. But in Luke 2:52, it says that Jesus increased. Yeah, you're writing this down. This is one of our five scriptures in the whole hour talk, but we'll get more of that when we get with you individually. But Luke 2:52 says that Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and favor with man. I think a lot of times in the Christian context, we leave out some of these groups. With businessmen at my age, at 30 years of age or 31 years of age in life, a lot of time we may leave out the physical, where we're so active in business and ministry and family that we don't take care of ourselves physically. At your age, we may tend to emphasize the social life, or active in a Christian atmosphere, sometimes we tend to de-emphasize the social life totally. And the thing that Deanie and I want to get across to you today is there needs to be a balance in your Christian life. And we sought to have a balance both growing physically and intellectually and socially and spiritually. And so in our dating activities, we went to church, we went to baseball games, we went to stock car races, we did a lot of other things that guys like to do, but I did not care to go to a movie with her. There were a lot better movies to see than today, but I did not care to go to a school play or this type of thing. I really just didn't have any desire to do that. But I was, you know, 19 or 20, 21 years of age when we were dating, and these were important to her, but they were not important to me. So the thing that I want to emphasize here is that in dating, most of you are probably, what are most of you, sophomores or juniors? What's the...
A little bit of everything.
The whole span? But I mean, we've got the whole span of everyone here, but in terms of your age and life or where you are, when you're taking out a gal, guys, and gal, when you're going out with a guy, and you're having a dating relationship, you need to be careful to be interested in the interest of the other party. And I think sometimes, I'm going to talk to the guys specifically about this, gals, for about 30 minutes in a few minutes, but we as guys are some of the most inconsiderate people that I know. We as Christian guys have a reputation as being some of the least considerate people that there are. And so the dating thing, another thing I wanted to say about this is a lot of times Christian groups look at dating and they say, they see the world dating, and they're totally wrapped up in their date life. It's everything. Their studies go down. They're not able to hold a job. They're not able to be active in a ministry. They're not able to do anything. Then you see the Christian, and a lot of times we go to the other extreme, but we have no date life. And Deanie and I believe that to date is normal. To date is not bad. To date is not just for entertainment's sake. To date is not just to have a good time. We believe that in society today as we know it, that the date life is probably the most important time in your life where you build character qualities in your life, that you learn how to get along with other people. And if you don't learn it at age 19 or 20 or 21 or 22 before you get married, then when you're 28 or 30 or whatever age you get married, when you're 30 years of age and you're married, you've been married a few years, if you haven't learned these character qualities and how to get along with people before you're married, then unfortunately it's a lot harder to learn them afterwards. And that's why even in Christian marriages today, we're seeing divorce courts, we're seeing marriages that are just torn apart by marital problems because they did not learn the characteristics and the interpersonal relationships that they needed to learn with other people while they were dating, because they were in an abnormal atmosphere or they did not really get a chance for the Lord to teach them these things in their life. And so we need to be balanced, not to one extreme or the other, but God, there's some real things that He wants to teach you during this year, during these years of your life.
Philippians 2, 3, and 4 talks about this idea that Kent brought up already of interests, of being balanced in your interests. When we first started dating seriously when we were in college, I found this to be true, that in Philippians 2, 4, where it talks about being interested and looking on the other person's interests, not just on your own. And the things he was interested in, I didn't even know about. He loved sports, all kinds of sports. I knew nothing about any sport. He took me to more football games than I ever could have dreamed anybody ever played anywhere. And he'd talk about downs, and it looked to me like everybody was always down, and I didn't know what he was talking about. And I literally, in some sports, just had to get books out and study to know what he was talking about so that he would talk with me about it. Because I had one thing figured out real quick. If I wasn't knowledgeable on what he was interested in, and he couldn't converse with me about it because I didn't know what he was talking about,
then what he'd do, instead of taking me, is take his brothers who understand what he's talking about, and they'd have a ball. And I didn't want that. And I learned that you really need to put some time in on the interests of the other person. And if it takes some studying or takes some asking them some questions and being honestly willing to learn, it may be in a field of study that you know nothing about, but it's that other person's whole life. And you need to be so interested in them that you would care for the things that they care about. And also, on this idea of balance, excuse me, between secular things that we call secular, although we know as Christians that there's no such thing in our lives, but ministry and activities in schools, sports, all these different things that need to be balanced in our lives. And one of the things that needs to be balanced and needs to be in effect between two Christians dating is that our interests, not only in things like studies and sports, we're willing to share, but our interests spiritually. And I mentioned before that we had already decided that we would only date Christians. But actually, that decision, as we grew in the Lord, became more narrow than that. And this may sound very old-fashioned, and we're not really too old-fashioned, but we learned that your interest in spiritual things needs to be to have the same motivation spiritually. Do we both have the motivation to be like Jesus, to be growing to be more and more like Him? And if that same motivation is there, then you're going to grow together spiritually instead of having that be something that forces you to grow apart. And also, similar goals in life. Now, to give you an example, and the reason I say this is because someday you're going to fall in love with some of the people that, one of the persons that you've been dating, and eventually marry one of the persons that you started out dating. Now, if your goals in life and the directions you're heading are at opposite extremes, and you do go ahead and fall in love, you're in trouble. Either one of you's got to give up what their goal was, which causes resentment and guilt and everything else. There are cataclysmic marital adjustments in a situation like that. And I knew before I ever started dating that there was two groups of people that I could not be a wife to. And that may sound silly, but I had really thought through. And I knew that I didn't have in me the qualities it would take to be a good wife to two different groups of people. One of them was doctors. Now, my dad's a doctor. That's why I knew I didn't have what it took, because many times mother had to be so flexible and she'd get a perfect evening plan and then he'd get called away. And I knew that'd just shatter me. I didn't have that type of personality. So if a fellow was going into medicine, I didn't date him. It was just kind of a safeguard. Another group was preachers. Nothing against preachers, but I knew, at least I thought I knew, that at that time I would really have a hard time being a preacher's wife. Well, this was before he decided he was going into the ministry and made his major in college pre-ministry. Well, when he did that, I didn't say a thing, and he didn't know that I had thought that way, and I didn't say anything. And I really prayed, and I was very serious, and I said, Lord, either you need to change my heart and give me what it takes to be a good minister's wife for him, or the other option was change his direction, which I didn't demand the Lord do. There was a lot of options he could have done, or I could have broken up before we got to the point of deciding to be married. And I was really willing to do any of the three because of this idea of direction in life and motivation in life, because you're talking about a whole lifetime ahead of you eventually that's going to start with the date life. So having spiritual motivation the same and goals for your life at least similar is something that you need to think about in dating.
We're going to have to work on our time because we're trying to squeeze 15 years in 30 minutes. But one thing I was supposed to say during my last little period is that about prayer on dates. And then again, this may shake up some of the things that you've heard from all of our spiritual leaders, but Deanie and I are of the firm commitment that you, regardless of your age, should not pray on dates. And I'll tell you why. Most Christians, they talk about the joy of praying on dates with a, you know, a gal or a guy. But I would say until you're engaged or right before engagement, which may be for some of you a year from now or it may be a number of years down the road, there's nothing that binds two people closer together besides the physical sex relationship, and maybe even more than that, other than prayer. And I think that a lot of Christian couples have really gotten in trouble because they pray on dates. I'm not against prayer as individually. I'm not against prayer as a whole. But when you, as a guy, sit down and pray with a gal, your two hearts are knit together as you become closer to Christ and they're knit together yourselves. And I will say that when you do spend a lot of time or very much time at all, besides maybe a short prayer, maybe to give direction to your date, but I think that when you pray on dates, it knits your hearts too close together, and you're going to have some emotional problems that you're going to have to really have some problems with unless you're well on the way towards getting married, and I would say in the engagement stage, and we'll talk some more about engagement in a minute. So that may be against what you've heard, but we've seen that if you spend much time praying on dates, it brings you too close together too quickly, and we would advise against it.
Say one thing.
And what?
Also on that, when you pray together, seriously praying together, you tend to reveal too much of yourself too fast. You really, you know, you've seen this even in groups, and you can imagine how much easier it is to do with just the two of you. And if you're not God's right partner for each other yet, then you can get way ahead of His timetable by doing that.
And like I said, we're going to have to move along, but let me read Proverbs 10, verse 4 to you. It says, "Poor is he who works with a negligent hand, but the hand of the diligent makes rich." And the point that I want to make here is that a dating relationship between a guy and a gal should encourage diligence in that person's life in three areas. Number one, in study, because God has you in school not for you to learn some great spiritual principles in your life right now, but the main thing He wants to do for you is to be a student. And if you flunk out of your college, then you're not going to be able to learn the spiritual things He wants you to learn. Number two, in the area of work, a number of you may have a part-time job. If you don't, then that's great that you don't have to, but I think the best thing for a college student is to be active in a part-time job or someplace where he works as opposed to the physical, the training mental process. And thirdly, in your area of ministry. And if your date life is hindering your study habits or a part-time job that you may have or a summer job or whatever, or your ministry that God has involved, that He has led you to, then probably it's a dating relationship that may not be of the Lord. I believe that a dating relationship, that if a guy has a part-time job or he's carrying 15 hours in school or he has a ministry of a Bible study every Tuesday evening or whatever his ministry is, that if he is dating a girl on a once a six-month basis or on a steady basis, that gal should encourage him in each one of those three areas of his life and encourage him to be diligent. And if your dating life is encouraging you to slack off in the area of ministry, in the area of study, or in the area of work responsibilities that you have, then probably this date life is bad for you. And Deanie started out at Central State University, which was a college then and changed to university. This was back in 1965 and 66. She had three semesters there of straight A's, and then she came down to OU and found out what college was all about. And at this time, I switched my major from a pre-ministry major after a lot of soul-searching to a business major. My grade point went from barely a C average of barely passing some of my courses to about straight A's in the courses because I was in an area where God had given me some talents and ability. I enjoyed it. And in terms of ministry, in terms of leading people to Christ and building spiritual principles in other people's lives, I was twice as effective as a non-ministry student than I was as a ministerial student. And God really worked in my life at this time, but it was a major decision of which Deanie helped me make at that time. And through guys like Max Barnett, before Max was up here at Norman, flew up to see me one time and spent a day with me just on what God's will for my life would be. And so your dating relationship at this time needs to help the major decisions that you're going to be making, because the decisions that you make at this time in your life, of course, are more valuable than the decisions that you'll make for the next 20 years. And let me just say in this that one of the things I liked about a part-time job while I was going to school is that it kept me from being self-centered. And I think that ministry and work and study obligations keep a person from being self-centered, totally worrying about their ministry or their studies. Because by having a part-time job, then I was investing my life in helping other people be a success. And this kept me from being self-centered. And I think a lot of times as college students, we become very self-centered. Mom and dad are sending us money to go to school, and you know, we've been the important person on the high school campus, and we're a big deal to all the kids back home and this kind of thing. But basically, I think that God needs to work the self-centeredness out of our life so that He can use us in a workable ministry the rest of our life. Dean?
By the way, I never did tell him until he'd changed majors of what all my prayers and thoughts had been up to that point. I sure did rejoice when he did it, though. The next thing that happened in our dating relationship happens an awful lot in dating relationships. We broke up, and I instigated the breakup, and really did come as a shock to Kent, because I waited until one Sunday night when he was driving me back to school, and I said, honey, let's stop and talk in the car. I've got to tell you something. And gave him back his drop, and he's sitting here going, what? And the fact was, I had all along the way been sick nigh unto death of sports. And it wasn't that I hated sports. I'd really learned to like them, but I sure would have liked a movie or a play thrown in or a walk in the park or study together, or there was a whole lot of little bitty detail things that really none of them were important, but just the little details that a girl just hangs on to. And I thought, I really honestly thought we were incompatible. You've heard that term before. I knew we loved each other. Spiritually, we were compatible. Our activities in that regard were great. We just had a ball together. But I thought we were incompatible because he liked all these things, and I was just sick of him, and he didn't meet my needs for the details in my life, the little romantic things that I wanted him to do and think of on his own, and he didn't. And so I just broke up with him. Now, I tried to change him. I tried to get him to see all these things, and I'd hinted, and hints don't work on guys. I'll explain why in the next session, but they really don't. But I had tried to change him, and it just didn't work. And the fact was, I had never really communicated anything to him. I had never said, "Kent, I'm tired of basketball. Let's go to a movie." I had never said, "What I'd really like to do on an afternoon that's pretty like this is go for a walk in the park." I'd hinted, and he didn't get the hint, so I thought, he doesn't care. And I had never really communicated these little things. And I want to bring in Ephesians 4:32 here. Being kind, tender-hearted, and forgiving toward one another. You know, I think, especially as Christians, we get very idealistic in what we want our dating partner to be, spiritually and in every other way. And all of us girls have our knight in shining armor idea, you know, and we get very idealistic. And when our Christian date doesn't come through on some of these areas, we not only lack forgiveness, we even lack tolerance. In fact, a lot of girls that I know have broken up with their Christian guys saying they're not spiritual, when the fact is they're normal, they're just not perfect. And I would bring that in because that's exactly what I did, without any communication to him at all.
Well, her problem was a lack of communication, which she's going to talk to you about.
I learned a lot.
For a few minutes, for 20 or 30 minutes. My problem was a lack of consideration, and I was not being considerate to her. And it's all the little things, guys, that the girls worry about. My sister, when I told her, she's a senior, involved, very active in the BSU here at Norman. My sister, when she found out we were speaking to you today, said, "Tell the girls and the guys about the trash can." And what does the trash can have over the BSU girl? And the thing is, the trash can is taken out once a week. So, at least. So, you know, there's a lot of truth to that. And my sister has been in the BSU environment for 4 years. And
terrible.
Guys, you know, we can be in a beautiful spiritual atmosphere, but the gals that are in this room and the gals that are in your BSU back at school, there's nothing wrong with taking a girl out. You know, it can be to a Christian activity or anything else, but the normal needs that a girl has emotionally and all the other areas of her life is to be taken out. And generally, because of the society that we live in today, the gal is not able to pick up the phone and say, "Joe, will you go to this thing with me?" Now, they hook up these deals every once in a while, so they're forced to do that because that's their only opportunity to ask us to anything. But all I can say, guys, is that there's nothing unnormal about a normal dating relationship, and it would not hurt you to do just to pick up the phone and to ask Sally or Joan. You may not even be dating them, you may even not be serious or anything, but just say, "How would you like to go out and have a Coke?" And you don't know what you could do to that gal's life. It's the little things that make a difference to a guy. If you don't believe me, look at these girls' faces light up when I said that. But anyway, I'm
You're
not supposed to forget the flowers, but don't forget the flowers. It's the little things that the gals really like. I went to my dad just brokenhearted, and I said, "Dad, what should I do?" I was about 20 years of age, and I was a junior in last of our sophomore year, or a junior in college. And he said, "Well, you really love the girl." And I said, "Yeah, I've dated her for a year or two. She's the sharpest thing, you know, that God's put on this earth." And he said, "Well, if you really love her," he said, "I would pursue her with every thing that you can use." And so I was not supposed to see her that week, but I wrote her a 7-page love letter. I wrote her a couple of poems that I've never written a poem in my life. I sent her some flowers the next day. The third day, I sent her a box of candy. The next day, I called her and said, "Could we go out for a Coke?" And I saw her for 20 minutes, and I went back to, she went back to study. I went back to cry, you know, because it was a emotional experience for me. But then the next day, I called her on Thursday afternoon, and I said, "Can we go for a walk in the park?" And, you know, these things did not cost any money. Most of them probably didn't spend $4.71 all week long. It didn't take much of my time. But these are exactly the little things that the gals, that she had been telling me that gals were interested in. And so another thing that I did at this time, which I really recommend to you, and Bill Gothard talks a lot about this, but I would recommend talking to a girl's parents. If you date her, I don't care if you're dating her seriously. looking towards marriage, or you've just dated her two or three times. I think it's an excellent idea for you as a guy to go to her parents, if that's possible, or to give her parents a call on the phone or write them a letter and just say that, you know, you are genuinely interested in their daughter and you'd like to know what pleases her. In the afternoon, I made an appointment to see her dad and saw him up at his office one Sunday afternoon. And father, Dr. Dave Stewart, is probably one of the most sensitive, kind, considerate men alive today. And I just didn't match up to him. But once I found out how he thought and some of the techniques that he had of dealing with other people, it helped me to do a lot better job in dealing with his daughter. Go ahead. We need to quickly
finish this. You keep saying that.
I know.
Well, by the end of that week, I was so confused I didn't know what to do. I loved him, and here now he was doing everything I'd ever dreamed, and I just didn't know what to do with him. So I got in a car and went to Dallas for the weekend. I took my high school sister and said, I'm getting out of here. So I just took off, and I missed him so much I couldn't stand it. By Saturday night, about 1 in the morning, I woke my sister up, and I said, come on, we're going home. And she said, you have lost your grip. And we got in the car and drove back home, and by the next morning, he knew I was home because he'd been watching for my car. And by Sunday afternoon,
after church, you know,
that was when we were back together again, and within a month we were engaged to be married. And see, after getting a few of these details ironed out, we had it all figured out. And on engagement, there's one thing or a couple of things that I will just say briefly.
Now, you all aren't going to be engaged for the next 5 years, I know, but you just listen to this.
We have a little policy since our engagement and watching an awful lot of other friends go through engagement and getting ready to get married, that when you have a choice, date long and be engaged short. Now, by date long, I don't mean you have to date 3 years before you know this is the one. What I mean is if you have a choice, make your engagement shorter, not longer. When you've figured out this is the right one for you, don't just quit, get the ring and say, well, a year and a half from now, when so-and-so graduates, we'll get married. Because the girl's whole mentality changes when that ring gets on her finger. Because from the time of engagement on, it is not a matter of he is my date and I love him and he's the one I'm going to marry. It's a matter of I belong to him. And that difference in a girl's mental being makes engagement a very tough emotional time. It's very hard to stay pure during engagement. And the shorter the better, as long as it takes to get that wedding planned and get married, that's about how long an engagement ought to be. And we've told that to many, many people. And the ones who took the advice, 100% of them have come back and said that's right. And some of them haven't, and they're still happily married too. But it just is easier to do it that way. And also, one of the reasons we waited, we'd been dating 3 years by now, is to be financially independent. And I think this is crucial to getting off on a good start in a marriage, is to be financially free, independent. And we had to get to the point where we could get through school, tuition, books, and everything else for 3 more semesters, plus pay rent and live and everything that it takes. And we waited until we were financially independent and able to do that.
Let me just say about the engagement thing again, that the Navigators have had a profound effect upon the BSU ministry here with Max Barnett and the BSU ministry that you're involved in. And I've been acquainted with the Navigators for 22 years now, and they've had a profound effect upon my life. But I've seen many Nav couples involved in a discipleship ministry that have met each other at a conference, that have communicated through writing or over the phone, and then they get engaged, and they're with each other for about a month, and then they're married. They may date each other through letters for 3 or 4 years. And let me just say this about that, that it's a horrible way to try to learn to know each other. And I would be—I would have to get a real insight from God before I did this. And you all would probably have got 3 or 4 of you in this situation right now. But it's so much easier. If you've got a person and they live a long, long ways away, then quit the job that you've got right now or finish your schooling. Go to that place of wherever it is, Dallas, Texas. Get a job there and work there for a year and get to know that person before you get married. Because what you don't see, you hear about these grand courtships and the sovereignty of God and this kind of thing. What you don't see are the breakups and the problems that those couples have 4 or 5 years down the road. And most of them that have problems in that area, you come to Oklahoma City and get some counsel for some people in Oklahoma City. And let me tell you, there's been gobs of them through Oklahoma City for that reason. So let me just say that when you are involved in a Christian concept ministry like this, we would encourage real life communication. If it has to be done through the mail and the phone and that kind of stuff, great. But then get together and live in a city with that person, that guy or that gal, for 6 months or a year. Get to know them before you get married, because, when you get married, as I'm going to say right now, it's like two universes colliding. And it's not just two planets or two people, but it's like two whole universes colliding. Your world, your family, everything. And it's so much easier to work those problems and those details out ahead of time. And I'm all for God bringing those two people together. But I'll tell you what, marriage is great, but it's tough enough to make the adjustments that you need to make. Even though the person is super spiritual, and even though it's of God, it's tough enough to make those adjustments unless you know the person before you're married. I may get a lot of flack from saying that from a lot of my Christian friends, but we've seen it true in marriage after marriage. And I'm just going to say quickly here that we went to both sets of parents before we were married. We were financially independent. We both were working part-time jobs and carrying a full load in college, and we're active in Christian work in our churches and other things. But I realized that we were married at age 20, which is probably maybe a year, two or three or four years before the average age that you'll get married in this group. But if you have the right maturity and God's got the right person and you're financially independent and this kind of things, then it may be a possibility. But we went to both sets of parents and talked to both sets of parents. I was scared to death to go to her parents, but it was a frightening experience. But it was great to get the parents together before we got married. That's another thing, that living in the same community, if at all possible, live in the community where at least one of the sets of parents are, maybe both of them. And while it's good after you get married to get the heck out of there and get away from both sets of parents before you're married, it's good to bring those parents together, because you cannot believe, we came from the two best Christian families you can imagine. I mean, Christ was the Lord of our homes. But still, you've got to bring those two universes together, and they have a lot of different thoughts and ideas. And so it's very good to get your parents to know each other. And then again, let the people that you're dating, the guy or the gal that you're dating, let her or his parents know your parents. You say, I'll never marry Joe. I'll never marry this clown. But 3 years later, you know, you're walking down the aisle with him. So let your parents get to know each other. And I think it really helps a lot later on.
On these, the idea of the two universes, the things that make marital adjustments difficult are the details. Again, like here's my universe, my family, and we've got traditions and we've got customs and we've got ideas that are so subconscious and inbuilt in me that I don't even consciously think them out. Well, he's got his whole family and traditions and customs. And you know the first thing that comes up if you get married in December? Both sets of families expect the happy newlyweds to spend Christmas at home. And it's those little things that will cause the adjustments in a marriage. And when you've kept them informed and your parents feel like they know him or they know her, then they don't resent your partner or your spouse as because they're not fearful of losing you. They really do believe they're gaining him. And so when you keep them informed as you go, if you don't live near them, you know, if you're going to school and they live a long ways away, by letter, you know, you don't have to say, I have had X number of dates with so-and-so and we went to, you know. But if you, in your letter, happen to mention you're still dating Jim and he's just super and, you know, he really, and just a note or two once in a while to make them feel like they're getting to know Jim, then when you bring Jim home, it is not such a big deal. Anyway, we've got to go on. Love really is the desire to do all you can to ensure the happiness and success of another. And it often means inconvenience. And it's not the puppy love kind of a thing, an infatuation that you see in high school. And when you're first still just learning to love. A mature love gives and gives and gives, no matter how inconvenienced it is, because its desire is for the best good of another. And see, when your parents, the way they're going to know that you're gaining the maturity to have that kind of a love to succeed in a marriage love relationship is by how you love them, how you show that at home, how considerate you are of their feelings, how you're willing to give for them, even if it's inconveniencing, even if you have to keep up with them in letters more often than you usually write or go home on holidays or whatever. But your parents are very important, and they're going to be very important to you all your life. And keeping them involved in this relationship will be very important to you. I've said that three times.
Now, you all may come from non-Christian families. Maybe a number of you do. We've been hammering away on this, and maybe we've said some spiritual things which may shock you. But, boy, the importance. I can't emphasize enough your relationship with your own parents and your relationship with the parents of people that you date. Because the Christian home today is falling. It's just falling apart at the seams. The foundations have been taken out from under the Christian homes here in the United States. And if God is going to have Christian homes in the next generation, they're going to have to start with folks just like you here in this room. Let me read two verses to you. Number one, 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4. Love is patient, love is kind, love is not jealous, love does not brag, and is not arrogant. And that's a number of the things that we need to learn. Patience in the dating relationship, because, you know, it may be many, many years before God has you the right man or the right woman to marry. And so you're going to be involved in a ministry before then. You're going to be involved in school. You're going to be involved perhaps in a number of years of work. And so you need to be patient. You need to be kind. You need to be not jealous. And jealousy, we do have that in our Christian environment, in the dating world, as anywhere else. Let me just say this about the Word of God. I know that you're all being exposed to Scripture memory. But anyone of your age who is memorizing one or two or three verses a week and has not memorized 1 Corinthians 13 at this point in life is probably needs to look at their priorities again, because one of the things that God wants to build in you is love for the right love relationship whenever that time is. And so I put on your chart of verses to memorize. Memorize the whole chapter of 1 Corinthians. Let it become a part of your life. 1 Corinthians 13, not the whole book. And particularly out of the Living or out of the Phillips. Or out of the New American. I notice a number of you have New American, but get a translation that really means something to you, because that will be very important for you setting standards and guidelines for your dating life in years to come. And then as my last comment, besides closing this up before we have our separate sessions, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 3 says this about the physical relationship. For this is the will of God, your sanctification, that is, that you abstain from sexual immorality. And I know that being in a Christian environment, in a Baptist student union, that probably we've tried to bring some other things up to you today, and we're going to be talking about a number of other areas the next 30 minutes separately, but I'm sure that this area is hammered and hammered and hammered at, but let me hammer at this one more nail. The physical relationship is so, so, so important. That's why I think that we need to have a balanced dating relationship. The problems where I see with people with a physical relationship are those who are over at one extreme. They're not interested in school. They're not interested in their job. They're not interested in ministry. All they can think about is the gals, or all they can think about is the guys. All they can think about is last Friday nights and last Saturday nights date. And that's the way the world goes. And I'll tell you, that's going to lead to real problems in the physical area. But over here in the Christian group is just the opposite. We don't date. And we don't date enough, and we don't have the right kind of proper, balanced, I'm going to use that word for the 15th time, relationship with the opposite sex. And because of that, when that real relationship finally comes, and maybe when God's perfect person finally comes, we go overboard in this area of the physical. And a lot of you gals say, you know, this guy is just the sharpest guy, and he is so spiritual. But let me tell you, most spiritual guys that I know, if they have a fault in their life, if they have an area where Satan will try to get them down, that's in the area of the physical relationship. And gals, Deanie's going to be talking to you about some specific things that you can do. But a guy, just because he's spiritual and just because he's really being used of God, does not mean that he has problems with the physical. And sex is just as big a problem to him, or probably more so, than it is of the non-Christian world. And so as Deanie and I are going to emphasize, we've tried to emphasize already, and we're going to emphasize again and again in the next time with you, and that's to set your standards high. Set your standards high now before you date a lot, or before you even date more in your life, and to communicate in this area. Don't act like this area is not there, because the physical is there, it's normal, it's natural, and everything else. The song, You Light Up My Life, that all my kids have memorized, even my three-year-old girl, says, if it feels so right, how can it be wrong? You know, Pat Boone's daughter may have sung the song, but the lyrics are wrong, because that's not what the Word of God says. And we cannot base our physical relationships on how it feels. We have to base our physical relationships on what God says is right. And so even though I know that everybody harps at you on this thing, let me just tell you from looking back on it from 12 years, Deanie and I for the last 2.5 years have spent probably at least 50 to 70% of our Christian ministry in counseling other couples. Particularly my area has been in the area of counseling Christian couples, and Deanie's area probably more in the area of depression and all the problems that gals have, but I can't tell you how many Christian couples have been put on the shelf in terms of ministry for God because of the guilt in their life, because of premarital sex or other problems in this area. And you would look at them and say, man, there's a shining couple for God. How could they have ever had problems in that area? In the third or fourth week, when we finally say, we've checked every other part of your life, could there have possibly been some things that you let down your standards in your dating life before you were married? And every time when there's been a problem in that life, they say, yes, there has been. I've never told anyone, but the guilt has just eaten me inside. And it destroys their physical relationship as a marriage partners and everything else. And so all I'm saying is, I'll warn you again and again and again, as I was warned, is that we have to be on top of this area. And just because you're dating a Christian gal or a Christian guy, don't think it's going to make it any easier. Dean?
Well, I think just to wind up, what my thoughts would be on dating is that dating, a healthy dating relationship, well, whole series of them for that matter, builds character. It teaches us interpersonal relationships, how to react to the opposite sex. It also is, you know, it is fun. It's good for entertainment. It's a lot of fun. But it builds an emotional growth and a balance, a maturity there that is going to have to come sometime. I referred a minute ago to the difference in the puppy love and a mature, giving love that will take inconvenience and will take change and will take hardship and come right on through supporting each other with it. And that is a growth process, and emotions have to go through a growth process just like anything else does. And there's growing pains associated with that process just like anything else. You will have breakups, you know, like we did. You will be emotionally involved, and that is that makes you vulnerable, and there's some hurts that come there sometimes. But the fact is it's a process, and it's part of a growing, maturing process that God intends, getting us ready for marriage. Now, other cultures have other ways of doing it, but the fact is we are Americans in our culture, and this is the way our society does it, is in dating. And if we don't go through this growing process now, we will go through it sometime. But it may be through some very traumatic marital adjustments later. So we recommend dating, and we still do. We still date. Our children talk about that. They know the difference in when we're going out socially with another couple and when we're going on a date. And they'll ask us, where are you going on your date? What are you going to do? And for so many years, they ask us this, and we finally said, you want to go on a date with us? And they wanted to go on a date with us. So we took them to a Bill Gaither concert, which is, that's one of the things we like to do. And we took them with us on our date. And at the end, my little girl looked up and she says, Mommy, she says, dates are fun, but they take too long. And she fell asleep in the car. So they haven't desired to go on a date yet. But they know the difference in our going out with friends and our dating. And we heartily recommend it.
Let me close up by saying this in a matter of review. And then, number one, we said to date a Christian as spiritually motivated as you are, particularly this makes it harder for girls. But gals, I think it'd be a lot easier later on in your life. We guys fall down because there's not as many mature spiritual guys in this world as there are gals. But I would encourage you to try to date a guy at least of the same spiritual maturity of you, because it really makes it hard for the husband to be the head of the home if the gal is ahead of him spiritually by leaps and bounds. And number two, we said to revolve dates around God's purpose for your life, particularly in the area of your schooling and your work and your ministry. Let's don't let the tail wag the dog in this area. Then number three, to exercise self-control. Number four, that both of you need to be in harmony at home. There's nothing that's more against the whole Christian life that Christ is trying to bring to people than a person who is an active young person, college student for Jesus Christ, but he has a poor relationship with his parents at home. And then number five, just the proper timing. You know, be patient. That's one of the things it says in 1 Corinthians 13. And it may be a year when these things take place in your life, or it may be 5 years, but you need to realize that right now, the dating that you experience right now is an important part of your life. So we would close just in a general session in the 45 minutes that we've had together in this part of it, just to have fun. We think that most Christians probably look down on dating. They don't look at it as having fun. They don't think it can be a worthwhile time of their life, but it really can be. Particularly you guys, be a little more considerate of the girls. Take them out for that Coke or do something with them, and have some fun, because the gals have to wait for the phone to ring or for you to ask them.